Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guests are Tom Herrick and Chris Weber. Tom has been an educator since 1983 in a career that has spanned all grade levels and roles in public education. His experiences as a teacher, administrator, district leader, Department of Education project leader, and executive director have provided unique context for his education philosophy. Tom is one of our profession's leading authors and consults with a variety of different organizations and has authored more than 20 books. Chris Weber is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, and he flew C-141s during his military career. He is a former high school, middle school, and elementary school teacher and administrator. He has a great deal of success helping students who historically underachieve learn at extraordinary high levels. As a principal and assistant superintendent in California and Chicago, Chris and his colleagues have developed systems of response to intervention that have led to unrealized levels of learning at schools across the country. Chris presents internationally to audiences on important topics in education, such as math and RTI. Welcome to the podcast, Tom and Chris.
Thanks. What a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with you, Tom. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, gosh, I always go back to my first year's teaching. You know, I had my desire was to come out and be the world's best science teacher. I was going to be the high school science teacher everybody remembered. Chemistry and biology were going to be life-altering events for anyone who entered my class. And I remember at my first job after year one, they said, job's up. I said, but wait, you said I could stay as long as I wanted to. They said, yes, you can. But perhaps you didn't read the fine print. We didn't say in which job. How'd you like to be our severe behavior teacher? Now, bear in mind, I had done zero training in behavior, in special education. I got my degree in genetics. I was going off to be the world's greatest science teacher. But, you know, the priority was, of course, to have a job. I had bills to pay. I had a wife and three children. And so I took the job. And I've got to tell you, it's been the moment that I refer to as being career defining. Working with some of our neediest learners, I learned so much about teaching and learning. In fact, if I could design every teacher's career path perfectly, I'd insist that every teacher spend time working in special education, working with our neediest learners. And that really was the springboard to everything I've done in this career. I think it weaves itself through everything I write, everything I present. My guiding mantra in all of my time as an educator has been very simple. I believe that every student's a success story waiting to be told. And I attribute all of that to that time where I could see the impact of the little things I did and how much appreciation there was for a group of kids that were written off. And so it's a reminder to me that that every kid has that capacity.
Yeah, and although that seemed like a difficult experience at the time, being asked to teach something that you weren't experienced in teaching, it really, you know, in the long term paid off and has
Absolutely.
Helped, you know, in your writing and presenting. How about you, Chris?
Oh, thank you. This could be so many things, but I, the moment my professional life changed, might be hyperbole, but not too much, was when I was the last a principal. And there's a parallel here with Tom's experience, the curveball that was thrown into his career. I was a secondary teacher and administrator. And my district leaders thought I would do a good job as an elementary school principal. I hadn't taught that, elementary school that is. And this particular school, great people, great principals who preceded me, honestly. But the fact that 8% of students were reading at grade level hadn't changed in 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they put me there. Like he can't do any worse, can he? We'll see what happens. But what changed was that in 1 year, we went from 8 to 40, and in 4 years to 80% of students reading at grade level. And there were other behavioral and mathematics and science, corresponding successes in those areas. But boy, that reading one was so dramatic. So that changes your life. I don't know how you don't let it. And what I mean by that is, how will you ever accept anything but that possibility, that hope, that promise? And you know, I said before, I know it to Tom, gosh, after that first year, I talked to my colleagues at the site, and I said, guys, we got to memorialize what we did, because people are going to ask us. You know, nobody really asked us, not right away, but we wanted them to, and eventually they did. But we were able to say, yeah, here's some things that we did differently. And everything we've written, Tom mentioned something similar, but everything I've said, written, done since that experience revolves around those three key elements that I still believe were central to our success. It's a professionally life-changing moment, I think, and others have had it. And I think it's what inspires us to continue to do what we do.
And that's something I learned from each guest I interview, right? Those trench stories have led to extraordinary changes in their life and help them in their current path. So we're here to talk about your book, which is The Road to Success with MTSS, a 10-step process. So why write this book now? And tell me about kind of how it was a work in progress for a while and how a lot of people interchange MTSS and RTI.
Would you like me to get started, Tom?
Go ahead.
Okay. Why now? It's a fair question. I asked myself this question because will be my 13th book, many of them, most of them with Tom. And frankly, the topics aren't terribly different. So why now? Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and Tom, I'm sure will add, but two things that we hope distinguish this book from other books and hopefully proves to be just so, so helpful are the practicality, the common sense nature of the examples and the approach. It's really intended to be so you've heard of this thing, you've tried it, but it's not gone exactly as you would have liked. And so that's one of the pieces of the book. The other piece, which isn't necessarily new in this book and certainly not new in our profession, is behavior or non-cognitive skills, soft skills, self-regulation, executive functioning, you know, these non-academic skills and attributes and characteristics and incredibly important traits that we can teach, that students must possess. And by golly, you know how we teach them and how we MTS them and RTI them and intervene on them? We use the same sets of procedures and policies that we do for academics. And that's both comforting, it should give us confidence, but it's also important because we can't really afford to have two different sets or multiple sets of systems that we're trying to manage and lead in a school. So I think those are two elements of the book that we're excited about and that we hope are beneficial to others.
We've tried to frame it, you know, as it implies that there is a road to this work, right? We've taken sort of a whimsical approach in terms of, you know, thinking about this along the same lines as you might think about taking a road trip with your family. Now, there's some things along the way that need to be some self-checks. There needs to be some additional opportunities to add or subtract from steps along the journey. We keep trying to emphasize to our colleagues that anything worth doing is worth doing well. And if it's worth doing well, it's not happening overnight. You know, we often talk about this notion of 3 to 5 years, not 3 to 5 months, because if it could happen in 3 to 5 months, shame on all of us that we haven't already done it. Not 3 to 5 weeks, because if it's 3 to 5 weeks, it's probably really not a deep initiative. It was something done out of expediency. And so, you know, we've tried to take that approach. We've tried to make the book very tangible in terms of your ability to read and jump right in right now, make some plans for you and your colleagues as you move forward. You know, we're hoping the timing is such that people will want to get this to assist them in launching their next school year. That's what we're excited about in terms of the approach. And then, as Chris has alluded to, I think we've really tried to emphasize, because we've certainly recognized, particularly during the time of the pandemic, that it's really a lot of what we once upon a time thought of as softer skills, our approaches to behavior, our approaches to social emotional learning, that if nothing else has been highlighted during the pandemic, is that we have an extreme need, right? Kids have not missed the pedagogy when they've been away from school. They've missed the people. They've mm-hmm. missed the interactions. They've missed their ability to, on some levels, learn how to function in a pluralistic society. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of this whole approach is, what do we need to do in that very large arena to ensure that all schools move all kids forward?
Yeah, and it's definitely something that people need to realize. It is going to take time, right? Because I think people try for a year, it doesn't work. They don't always follow really the rule of thumb, and you know, they try different approaches and then they give up. But like you said, it is something that we need to work on for a long period of time. So I wanted to ask also about, had you written this book 10 years ago, say, would this have looked any different than today?
Would you like to get started, Tom?
That's a good question. And you know, and it's funny you ask that, because on some levels, you know, if I look at the first book that that Chris and I co-authored with another friend, Charlie Coleman, you know, Pyramid of Behavior Interventions, I think, my goodness, I've gotten a whole lot smarter since we wrote that book. But if you asked me at the time, I might have been the smartest guy writing that book, right? And so I think part of it is just being open to what's going on. I mean, gosh, a decade ago, had we used the word pandemic as frequently as we had now? Had we ever gone Zooming without it implying some sort of childish way of getting your kid to eat their breakfast cereal? You know, all these things that are going on. So I think it's hard to say that it would have been the same. I think the basic principles, as Chris alluded to earlier, have been foundational for all the work Chris and I have done. All the writing we've done have some basic core foundational pieces to it that are driven by the beliefs, you know, of the two of us as educators.
I'm going to add to that, and perhaps, I'm not sure how this will sound, but this is the same book we would have written 10 years ago, foundationally. MTSS or RTI, or call it what you will, was developed in the 1960s by Benjamin Bloom. And this is well documented by one of our most amazing educational leaders, Tom Guskey, who was his PhD student at University of Chicago, who's written a lot about how Bloom so influenced RTI, and now, as we more often call it, MTSS. So from that point of view, I mean, I'm not sure the book that, or the articles that research that Bloom wrote in the 60s, 70s, and 80s looks too much different than what Tom and I are trying to do. What's different is we've now, and if you mentioned 10 years, it's been 10 years. Well, it's been more like close to 20 years for us doing this. So we've learned things. Have we seen mistakes, made mistakes? What might you do to avoid those mistakes? Here's how you might go sideways. Try not to do that. Here's examples. Something as basic, but gosh, you know, people want these. Here's a bell schedule that works to organize and structure this work. Oh, really? Can I have that? Would you share that? How did you get to consensus on that? How does it actually look operationally? So, and if you, I mean, 10 years ago, we did write a book about behavior, but I know so much more about behavior. There's more definitive, comprehensive research and guidance from our social scientist experts out there in these areas. CASEL, the Consortium on Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, didn't exist when we were started to write, or at least wasn't as known to us as it is today. So there's, I think there will always be a market and a need for a new set of guidance that helps folks with the work. My gosh, yeah, things are shifting, and that's good. We're continuously improving, and this book is hopefully a reflection of that.
So both of you work a lot with different districts and schools, and on your website, you do give some case studies. Is there a particular case or some work that you've done that has kind of led to some of the research that you use in this book?
I'll start. Tom, I work in a, I'm currently working in a school district. I took a few years off and was a full-time supporter of schools and consultant, but for the last 5 years, this, our schools ended last Friday. It's not yet June 30th, so I don't think I've ticked over to the next school year officially, but our schools are done. So for the last 5 years, I've worked in the school district, and it's a laboratory for this work and for the successes. But I in response to your case study question, mm-hmm. I remember a K-8 school, and our primary task, their goal, and this was after, you know, so we did some pre-planning, mm-hmm. But the work we focused on was tier two academics. Mm-hmm. And I've written about articles about blogs about tier two, I think is really the forgotten tier. Mm-hmm. I think most schools that think, you know, in good faith that they're doing tier two are doing tier three light. And that's okay. You can have tier three light and tier three, but you don't have tier two. And it's what Bloom called mastery learning. And it was such a common sense approach to the needs of high schools and high school students in the city of Chicago. And so that was our focus, is let's do that. Mm-hmm. Let's provide more time and alternative ways for students to master what's most critical in tier one in the core. Mm-hmm. That's tier two. And you can do that. It doesn't cost a lot at all in terms of resources, time, even personnel. And so in this K-8, we did that work. And if I wish I could have had taken pictures or video recordings of the teachers and just how much it changed their classrooms and their students' attitudes and mindsets, and of course, academic achievement. But that research and case study and those outcomes were just another indicator and to me of how important the work is and how impactful it can be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have any examples, Tom?
Yeah, for me, a lot of the work, you know, I got to spend an extended time at a middle school, and I was there for, 10 or 11 years. And so a lot of that sort of became the place. Now with the work I do, I really try to go into districts and schools mm-hmm. and not be there as a sort of one-off, experience that mm-hmm. I ask people to sign on for an extended period of time, because I'm quite willing to be with you. If I say it's a three-year journey, I'll be there with you, obviously all things being considered, but I want to be there to, you know, as Chris talked about, go through the highs and the lows, the struggles, the, oh gosh, we thought that was going to work. And my goodness, what a disaster. Mm-hmm. Hey, what did we miss? Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, try to become part of that whole notion of building team. I'm not a big fan of the sort of, it's been referred to as the drive-by professional learning, right? We're really trying, and again, with this book, trying to get very deep with what can be done. This is not something to enter into lightly, mm-hmm. not a surface application. It really is foundational to how schools should operate. And I think Chris and I could easily chronicle that every school we've ever been in that's been fabulous has this as, you know, a part of their regular routine, the approach they take, the recognition, that behavior is a key component and needs to be taught alongside the academics. Again, during the pandemic, that got highlighted, right? We know that it's a lot of the behavioral outcomes that people are struggling with as kids start to return to schools. And so how do we weave all of this, together becomes the significant piece. And that can only happen if we commit to being part of your growth as a school or as a district.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and several speakers who I've had on the podcast have mentioned that, you know, ongoing PD, right? Yep. It's not the one and done. And you need to really be able to work with them and make sure that they are, working on this over time. And that kind of leads into my next question about, schools and districts might, not be doing or following the right process in the MTSS process. So what are some mistakes you've seen being made or maybe some things that have been left out in the process?
Yeah, Chris has alluded to one.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
One, and that is, that there's a bypass of that critical tier two work. Equally, what we often see, and again, this isn't meant to point fingers at anybody in particular, but, you know, far too often we've gone to the schools and people have given us their tier two and tier three list. Mm-hmm. Right? These are the kids. Look, tier two and tier three are not designations of students, right? Mm-hmm. They are not, there's not a tier two kid and a tier three kid. There are kids who can benefit from some of these additional supports to ensure they learn and learn at high levels. Mm-hmm. We've gone into schools that say, we're not like your typical school, Tom or Chris. We got way more tier two and tier three kids. And the reality is they don't. They have a tier one problem, right? So that the core instruction hasn't been addressed to align with. You know, sometimes people have this mythical idea of a number that determines tier one, and above that or below that is next automatically tier two, rather than to say, look, we got a group of kids coming in this year that may not be like last year's kids. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't be teaching last year's stuff. Right. And so, you know, some of those things continue to be problematic. And then when you shift to behavior, it's much easier to get a designation and a label on a kid than it is to actually try to break through. I think people forget, you know, that special education in the day was designed for those students who were viewed to be outside. The vernacular of the day was outside the normal range of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Well, special education today has been overpopulated with a lot of kids that are behavioral challenges. Chris referred to Bloom. Bloom, early on in his work, said, I am of the belief that 95% of kids in schools today could achieve the highest standing. They could achieve the value of an A in any content area. But he said two things are critical, and Chris alluded to them, right? Mastery learning and opportunity for a reteach or a relearn, right? Mm-hmm. Bloom said learning could be the constant if time is the variable. We far too often make time the constant and then wonder why learning is the variable. I guarantee you this, Dana, every one of your listeners can identify an area of their own personal learning that they struggled with. And thank goodness they had time to learn it. I don't master everything the first time somebody teaches me. It doesn't matter how good the teaching is. You are never going to make me a proficient line dancer. It's not going to happen. I'm going to hurt people when I try, right? So there are some things that I need more time, more practice at. And so too is it with kids in schools today.
Mm-hmm. Chris, did you have anything to add?
I do. I second all of those things. I wish I won't say it as well as Tom just did. I'll pick up on these two pieces. We find, I would say, that amongst the two obstacles to doing this well are overcomplication and over-documentation. Mm-hmm. I'm all in favor of documenting the heck out of what students' needs are and what we're doing to support them and how that support is working. Mm-hmm. What I think happens too often is documentation serves as a gatekeeper or the checklist that needs to be completed for the support to be completed. I say, no documentation for a kiddo to receive support. All we need to do is know that the need exists and have a pretty fair idea of what the support is that they need tomorrow, this afternoon. And let's provide it and then let's document. What are we learning? What seems to have worked? What doesn't seem to have worked? This is not, I hope that doesn't sound irresponsible or unprofessional or that we're rushing to make a high stakes decision, like a determination of eligibility for special education services. I just don't think we're doing that. We've identified this student does not seem to be reading nearly where they need to be reading. We need to do something now. What do we need to do? Well, let's listen to them read. Doesn't appear to be phonics because they're a very accurate reader, but they do appear disfluent and not to be able to make meaning about what they read. I think we know what we need to provide. And then that gets provided. So the documentation piece or the forms and the checklists, I'll even say it this way, you know, we don't get credit for the development of this fancy plan. Mm-hmm. We don't get credit for that. We only get credit when it works. And that's where I wish our efforts lie. The second, as I said, is just overcomplication. There are, Tom and I have both kind of alluded to this. We've mentioned tiers. You know, there's not three tiers because Moses or some equivalent being came down from a mountain on high and said, there shall be three tiers. There are three tiers because we can anticipate three sets of supports that students may need. One, they come into our classroom, heterogeneous classrooms, hopefully, increasingly. They come into those classrooms with different learning needs and styles and readiness levels. Let's be ready for that academically and behaviorally. Let's call that tier one. We can anticipate that students aren't going to learn by the end of the unit, not all of them, and they're not all going to learn in response to our first best instruction. So the consequences of not being ready with some support in a timely manner are pretty significant. They're going to move on to the next unit, not prepared for it academically, and probably not in the mindset and motivation headspace to be as successful as they could have otherwise been. Cumulatively, that not learning what they ought to have learned in a given unit, chapter, month, boy, that's going to have also significant effects. So let's be ready. Let's gather evidence of need, gather evidence of success, and build in times for reteaching as it's necessary. It's going to be. And enrichment. Everybody is benefiting. And we'll call that tier two. And then lastly, we have students with significant deficits, significant needs and foundational skills, such that it doesn't matter if it's ninth grade history or seventh grade English or fifth grade math, man, if they have these deficits and these foundational skills, they're going to have difficulty in whatever it is they're trying to do. And we can say that broadly, those are in the areas of literacy, numeracy, and behavior. So we'll kind of search carefully, we'll screen to make sure we know who those kiddos are, and we'll determine what we think is the most immediate antecedent need, and we'll provide support in that area. Those kids are in our schools, a lot of them, some of them, a few of them, and that's called tier three, but it's not super complicated. And I think when we attempt to overcomplicate it, and that leads to misunderstandings, and it leads to misapplications and frustrations, and we've tried it didn't work. So I think those are probably two of the big ones.
Yeah, and I like reiterating, I think what Tom said and something you mentioned in the pre-chat was about, it's not the gateway to special education, and the tier that we place kids in isn't a permanent label, right? It doesn't require permanent intervention. There could be a kid, on tier three that eventually is a tier one.
Yeah. We I think we can all point to areas that we may have struggled with as learners. And thank goodness that there was a second or a third sometimes opportunity to learn. If you tell me something is an essential learning outcome, then we have to, by definition, be prepared to ensure every kid gets it, because you've said it's essential. You've said, I need to know this. Well, we can't opt out of that, because when we opt out of it, it makes the permanence of label so much easier. Well, look, he was in tier three last year. Guess he's got to be in tier three again this year because he didn't make any progress.
Right? Yeah. And that's, really important to know. Like, we're not, they could be in a different tier, the next year, right? That's a different teacher they're working with, a different subject matter. Time passes, a lot of things change, right?
We know, that summer happens, right? And lots of kids mature. By the way, I could also be in the same tier, but I have experienced significant growth, right? If I'm 4 years behind my reading level, for example, and I grew two based on your instruction, wouldn't we say that's a win? So let's build off the win. Let's measure growth, not just achievement.
Yeah, that's so important. Well, we've talked about a variety of things in your book and your experiences throughout your career. Out of everything we talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing each of you would like listeners to remember? And we'll start with Chris.
Yeah, we probably haven't talked explicitly about this, but what I would love them to embrace and commit to, and I know I'm pre-pandemic, I this was occurring. Post-pandemic perhaps has been accelerated, but it's the notion that behaviors matter so much that, as Carol Dweck and colleagues tell us, those non-cognitive factors, I'm using them as synonymous with behaviors. Those are more important than cognitive or academic skills when it comes to outcomes and achievement in school, college, career, and life. And most foundational, at least in terms of what we can nurture and support in schools, amongst those non-cognitive factors or behaviors are mindsets. And we can teach them, we can nurture them, we can promote them, we can model them, we must model them. We must create classrooms and assignments and assessment and grading processes that support, don't destroy mindsets. And I'm afraid sometimes totally unintentionally, we erode the positive mindsets that we so wish existed. So that would be the one thing I'd hope is just embraced even more than we already are. It's that behaviors matter and mindsets are the foundational sets of skills and attributes that will lead to not just better behavioral success, but academic and life success as well.
Great. Tom?
Yeah, you know, I want all of your listeners, Dana, just remember a very basic thing, that every school is populated with kids who can and will be wildly successful adults. Mm-hmm. And every school is populated by adults who already are. Mm-hmm. I encourage every one of your listeners, next time you go to work, look around the faculty lounge when everybody's gathered. You ought to be blown away by the adult talent that comes to work every day in service of kids. And that we have 13 years to prepare them to be successful, valuable, viable, contributing adults. Mm-hmm. We're the only profession that gets to shape our communities. I had a sad example of it recently. I went to a memorial for a student who passed away far too early. This kid was one of those kids who challenged every thought I ever had about why I became an educator. But you know what? He grew into being a really nice adult and became part of our lives. At the service, there were a number of adults who I probably spent a lot of one-on-one time as a principal. But, you know, they all wanted to come up and talk and let me know that they were okay now, that things had worked out, that they appreciated the opportunity to stumble, to struggle, and to find their way. We're in the greatest profession that affords that opportunity. And, you know, if people need a bit more guidance, that's why Chris and I write stuff. We're not saying it's the gospel. We're saying it's two guys who've got a little bit of experience, who've seen it work in a number of places, and we'd like to help others ensure that it works for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great reminder for us as a recording. We're ending the school year, but this will come out towards the beginning of the school year. And, you know, how we, you know, whether or not this 21-22 school year was difficult on educators, we really have to, you know, like you said, we're the only profession that guides students and has that much of an influence, like, especially when you see the students later on, right, as an adult. So where can people connect with each of you and find you online? We'll start with you, Tom.
So I'm available just at tomhirk.com is my website, thirk@gmail.com for anyone who wants to reach out and exchange any requests, comments, feedback. On Twitter, it's just @thirk. The other social media platform, just first name, last name, Tom Hirk, and you'll find me there.
Great, great. How about you, Chris?
Hopefully similarly simple. Website is just chriswebereducation.com. Email is just chris@chriswebereducation.com. And Twitter is a great way to connect. And my Twitter handle is just @webereducation.
Great, great. I'll put those in the show notes. Well, thank you both so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thanks, Dana.
Thanks, Dana. We appreciate your time.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me @OutofTrenchesPC. Thank you.